Put on our PJs, build a blanket fort. Let's go inside, get cozy, comfortable. It's not a coincidence, it's a metaphor about how we come together and build our world. And when the convo ends, we break it down and begin again. Sit down, tune in, crank it. It's time to bring your own blanket. Blanket Ninjas.
Welcome to Bring Your Own Blanket, a podcast where we get cozy, discuss interesting topics to uplift you, inspire, and contribute all inside of a blanket fort. My name is Maria.
Hi, I'm Janan. I'm me.
Hi. You are you. Yeah, welcome you guys to this episode. This is episode 6.
Yep.
Wow.
Episode 6, as seis. They say in Latin America. You learn a lot on this podcast, like how to say 6 in Spanish.
Cool. So before we start, Janan, why don't you go over the social media and where people can connect with us?
Guys, we usually put this at the end of the episode. I'm going to start putting it at the beginning so you freaking listen to it.
We'll mix it up. Maybe we'll do it in the middle once.
Yeah? Okay. Well, check this out. Follow us on Instagram at BYO Blanket, Facebook, BYO Blanket Podcast, Twitter, BYO Blanket PC. And more importantly, I mean, that's pretty important. I would say go to patreon.com and check out our whole community of blanket ninjas. You can contribute as low as $1 a month because you're cheap, but you want to show us some allegiance. Or you could go all the way up to $40 a month where you get a customized blanket, actually. Ooh. That'd be pretty cool. Anyway, there's anything in between as well. Basically, you guys support us, help us out. We get better equipment. We can do this with more hours of our week, get episodes out faster, listen to your feedback more. And it would really help out to do that.
And you also get to become a blanket ninja. Who doesn't want to be a blanket ninja?
Blanket samurais. So one more thing, if you do not want to contribute monetarily, that's fine. A really great way to help us out, please tell your friends about us, share us on your social media, and go review us on iTunes. That concludes the public sponsored message, the public service announcement.
Yeah. So on today's episode, we will talk about money.
Money.
And we have a fantastic guest ninja today.
This guy is one, a friend of ours from the yoga studio, because we don't really know anyone outside the yoga studio.
Apparently.
Yeah. And two, he is on the internship at the studio, so he is one of the newer teachers on the schedule. You can catch him Mondays at 2 p.m. for just $5 to drop in. Woo. It's a really good class. And he's also our financial advisor. This is Brett Harmeling, everyone. Hey, Brett.
Yeah, welcome.
What's going on, everybody?
Give us a little bio of who you are.
Little background. So I grew up on a small farm in Oostburg, Wisconsin. Yeah, up in the Midwest, so I brought cheese.
But I was just going to say that explains the cheese.
Yeah,
brought
Brett.
To enjoy here in this blanket fort.
So Jenny brought 3 wedges of cheese, and Brett brought 3 bigger wedges of cheese, which I didn't think could happen. It was really cool. Anyway, go on.
Anyway, and so then I went to undergrad at Carthage, which is just north of Chicago.
Carthage, I see.
Moved to pretty classy school, you know, founded by Abraham Lincoln in 1848.
What? That's cool.
Kind of neat, fun fact.
Yeah.
Oh.
Learned really good literacy schools, learned how to be a professional, so moved to Chicago, Illinois. Where I did technology and real estate.
I didn't know you lived in Chicago.
Absolutely.
That's
cool. A crazy ass city. Yeah. It is too big.
I actually love the city for about 4 to 5 months out of the year.
Yeah.
I can see that.
And then the weather was like, I was like, no thank you. I need to move on. So anyway, I took an opportunity down in Houston, Texas in specialty chemicals. Really geeked out on that. Love science. Love that industry. Company faded away. Stepped in back into technology, worked in cyber intelligence for about 18 months.
What?
Took a break after that.
Wait, what was your degree in again?
My degree was in education and marketing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Dang. Okay, go on. So, yeah. So nerd alert. And then what was after that?
I like to learn.
Yeah.
And so, and then after that, after cyber intelligence career, my contract ended there, and I took a 6-month break and I found a career that really lit me up, really inspired me. And it's something that was a soft spot for me, like most people. It was finances. And I was like,
dun, dun, dun.
Wow, how in the world is Brett Harmling going to do finances when this is something that scares him? You know, people, one of my favorite parts about talking about money with people is hearing how they make it. And you get to do two things with your money, I found. You either get to keep it or spend it.
What about invest it? Is that spending?
No, that'd be keeping it.
Yeah, that would be keeping, growing
it. So, shows how much I know.
Right. Keeping, making money simple and helping people rethink like the concept of where to put their money is something that really is grown a lot of passion about.
So you do financial advising, and to put it into terms now, with, do you want to say your company name?
Yeah, so I'm currently with a firm called White Rhino Financial.
Mm.
We've been a boutique comprehensive financial planning firm now for roughly 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we're equipped with a little over 500 years of financial planning experience from a planning perspective. So what that looks like for someone like, what does that mean? We have people that are specialties in each area. So investing, insurance, businesses, consulting. And so
it's a pretty cool building too.
Is
it the only one? No, there has to be more than just that building.
We have five locations currently.
Oh, okay. We've just been to one.
Yeah, you've been to the best one, the mothership.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's a pretty sweet building.
There's a lot of rhinos everywhere. I like it.
Oh, you know what? And guys, this is the question I've been wondering. Are there other colors of rhinos than white?
That is such a good question.
Are there black ones? Are there green?
So there's actually not such a thing as a white rhino.
Not the gray.
Wait, white rhino, isn't that a slang term for cocaine? Am I wrong about that?
No, there is a strain of marijuana that was named after white rhino, but that's not.
But it was named after your company?
No.
Whoa.
They got some great financial advising to start that business.
I don't think we'd be located in Houston, Texas if that was the case.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
First of all, thank you for being with us here in our pretty cool blanket fort. I would say, and I don't know when the last time you built one was. I know we were talking a little bit about this, and you have quite the history and, what can I say, a little soft spot for blanket forts. So how was this experience of building one as an adult, unless you've done it recently?
No, I actually haven't done it recently. However, you know, as a child, I grew up in I have four siblings, so I'm one of five. Grew up in like I said, on a small farm, and so one of the only spaces and places that I can get away and feel safe when I didn't know what to do, and I was a scared little boy, was to build myself a little fort. And I literally did that. And sometimes it was me and my brother, but most of the time it was just me.
It was cute.
And we got out, and it's the only way, because I knew, I sure as shit knew that my parents weren't coming in the fort. And so it was kind of a layer of protection, a layer of security.
Yeah. Wow.
So when I saw y'all start generating and building this fort, I was like, wow, kind of touched a soft spot.
Yeah. I really like doing this.
I know. It's
some
really
days
fun.
I don't want to break it down when we're done, but we've got to have a living room. And be able to walk. Listeners, when we build our blanket fort, there's almost no room to like walk in our apartment anymore. So, you know. Keep contributing money to us per month, we'll be able to get a better apartment. No. Just kidding.
You have your own recording room.
So. Yeah, we'll have a blanket room. This is years down the road.
I'm committed to helping you make that happen.
We're the new wave, Ellen and Portia. We're the brown ones.
The new wave. I was like, where are you going with this?
Yeah, and then we just have blanket fort rooms.
I want a blanket fort room. That sounds awesome.
So... what do I want to ask you? Well, actually, I want to talk. Surprised anybody? Anyway.
Shocked.
What?
So, guys, listeners, y'all out there, Brett is our financial advisor, and this how this came to be, I mean, it's not the coolest story ever, though it does give, it will give you insight on why we would even want to have Brett on today to talk about this, because, you know, he didn't pay us to come on to pitch himself or anything like that. We moved to Houston a little over a year ago,
mm-hmm.
and we're in our late 20s, early 30s, so a good time in life to start thinking about
adult stuff.
Yeah, how do I stop living paycheck to paycheck, right? How do I capitalize on these cool ideas I have, or whatever?
Save money for a house, a family.
I had tried to use, I think it was two separate financial advisors back when I was in Dallas, even before I met Maria, because I thought, oh great, I want to get rich. I'm going to talk to a guy that can help me. And these guys turned out to just want to sell me life insurance, one, and B, after that initial talk, they were like, well, it's going to be a few thousand dollars, which I didn't have, so it didn't work out. And that's fine. That's one way that financial advisors work, I guess. And then when we met Brett at the studio, he mentioned that he does financial advising, and then I was married now, so I thought, well, let's give it a try. So we had our initial consultation with Brett. He was dressed really intimidatingly, just the suit was crazy crisp and awesome.
Very professional.
He just looked at me oh no, too intimidating.
This is what you need to realize, Brett. We got used to seeing you in yoga clothes or at the studio in workout clothes, and then suddenly there you are with a suit and the tie clip and everything, and I was like, oh my god.
This guy dresses sharp. This guy dresses sharp. Yeah. Yes. Pocket square, everything. Okay, to it, just...
Did you not have a tie clip?
No tie clip, yeah.
You sure?
Yeah, I'm very sure.
100% positive.
But anyway...
You would know.
So we go into the meeting, and the building's really cool. There are rhinos everywhere. And Brett just is like, well, I'm here to talk about your goals, what your goals are, and then go from there with them. I don't want to get too much into detail, though... we left the meeting feeling like that was kind of interesting, really cool.
It was certainly a different approach than what I was expecting.
Yeah, we basically did a goal setting exercise.
Yeah.
That's all we did. And then Brett just told us about White Rhino and what it is, blah, blah, blah. We proceeded to have another meeting, I think a couple of weeks later, to then do more official stuff like log into the system that puts all of our bank statements in one place, so we just know how much money we have all at once between both of our bank accounts, and how much we pay per month and our utilities and da da da. Basically a cash flow analysis, would you say? Is that what you call it?
We call it the living balance sheet.
Yeah, living balance sheet. And then we left that meeting feeling really great too. So we had another meeting a couple of months later. I don't remember what that wasn't about. But at that point I started to think, okay, what's the fucking catch? when are they going to start asking for money? Have we signed a contract that I didn't realize we've signed? And Brett is a cool dude, so I wasn't suspicious of Brett necessarily. It's just that general weird way people get about money. Just how am I being swindled? Because swindling happens. And so I think it was the last meeting we had, maybe the one before that, I just straight up asked Brett, yo, how are you making money off of us? Because we had seven meetings that we hadn't paid for, an hour each, with Brett and
Paul Dickens,
who's British and just hilarious and amazing.
And very smart.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so it's Brett and Paul, and Brett, I'm not going to say it for you. What did you say when I asked you that? How are you making, quote unquote, money off of me as my financial advisor, and I haven't paid you a dime in a year?
I said I'm not. I said what I'm committed to doing is helping you create a net worth and a lifestyle that you want to for yourselves. And someday, when you get to the point where that's happening for you, I know that there will be a service or product that we're going to have to implement, and the company that we implement that with will then reciprocate me.
Yeah.
And rather than taking money off your balance sheet selfishly and putting it into my bank account, why would I do that when I could keep it on your balance sheet, help you grow it, and then long term, I help you hit your goals, and then I get reciprocated for that.
Boom.
So I like that. And I will venture to say that I like money. and that I would ideally have more. And I don't know how much more, but I want more. And that's the thing. And when Janan told me, hey, we're going to go see Brett, you know, financial advisor, it's cool, it's going to be great. And I was like, oh my God, this is so awesome. And at the same time, God, this sounds so boring.
Yeah.
That's a typical response.
Yeah. So how do you make this interesting and keep people engaged? Because obviously you're talking about their lives, right? Yeah. But how do you take away those, like, oh my God, I don't really care about tax laws. I don't really want to learn all of this. Like, who cares about the market? That's too complicated. Like, how do you eliminate those barriers for people and make it interesting?
So really, it's because I care so much about people that I've gotten myself trained professionally to be able to take the behavior out of people's money. And so what that looks like is, like, for instance, I'm not my own financial advisor. Like, I don't manage my own money. I'd be like, oh, he has all the answers. I don't have all the answers, nor does one other person. And so that's why using the team approach like we do at Wirano is so vitally important for each and every one of our clients' success.
What do you mean when you say take the behavior out? I don't get that. Say that, like, explain
it differently. So that speaks to essentially when we spend money or we use money in a way, we have behavior behind it. So you know, when you swipe that credit card or you go to Whole Foods and buy too many things, you have this feeling in your body, which is, this is relating to the yoga stuff right now.
Yeah.
You know, you have that innate intelligence.
Like guilt?
You're like, oh, like, why did I do that?
Yeah, like overspending and then being like.
Just helping people say, okay, here's what we would we help people identify what, I don't like to use the word budget, by the way. I like to say, like, this is what your cash flow situation looks like. And you can, I'm not telling you to not go to Starbucks 3 days a week, but let me just show you what the time value of that money is over the length of your, you know, until you want to get to your next goal is.
You know what that reminds me of? So to be in integrity, like when I'm talking about like Light Year Leadership, Baptiste Yoga, the style of leadership work that we all three do at our yoga studio. Mm-hmm. By the way, listeners, if you're not already hooked into something like that, I highly recommend Baptiste Yoga, first of all, as a yoga practice,
yes.
And Light Year Leadership, which is a body of work. Oh man, I could say so much about it. I won't, but it's great. Just go to it. You could go to thenewspaceleadership.com if you want some cool online courses. Anyway, to be in integrity means like to like say, like make a promise with my word, like I'm going to be at the yoga studio at 7 a.m. to teach my class. And then to be in integrity means to do that, to actually show up at 7 a.m. And then to be out of integrity would mean obviously not doing it, like showing up late, blah, blah, blah. And so one of the cool things I've learned in this past year, like working at Big through the leadership training I've gotten there, is when I'm out of integrity, if I attach an emotion to it, like guilt or shame, that just makes it puts this whole story around it that makes it way harder to just go back into integrity. And so I was taught, like, being out of integrity doesn't mean I need to feel bad. It simply means, like, I am. Like, there's no emotion attached to it whatsoever. I just am. And so then I can decide from a non-emotional standpoint, okay, well, I can either say, hey, I can't make it to the studio at this time, I found out, so I'm going to have to choose a different time or teach a different class. And like re-say my word in a different way or put in some tools in order to start keeping my word, blah, blah, blah. So is it the same as what you're saying, basically, or different?
I'd say that's right on point. You know, like, it's really simply the universal law of awareness. Like, that's what you're aware of, you can take control of, mm-hmm. and you can be held accountable for.
Yeah.
That what you're not aware of, if you're just blowing money and you're not aware of the impact that it's having, mm-hmm. on a goal that you have, whether it's having a kid, putting a kid through college, mm-hmm. buying a house, having financial independence. All those are amazing goals to have. Buying the dream car that you want. Well, what's the time value of the money that you're just not holding on to? And just so understanding the impact of that really helps people just change that behavior in a really simple and quick way.
Like 6,000 drinks at Starbucks equals your new car. Maybe that's not enough.
Well, maybe the down payment.
10,000 drinks at Starbucks equals your shitty new car.
Right.
Okay, that's cool. I like that.
Okay, so You know, what you're speaking to, right, the or what both of you are, the emotions and some of those attachment, the stories that people attach to money or the excuses. And I've noticed, and I don't know if this is your experience as well, Brad, people sometimes have really weird, like, just like a really weird view about money, whether it is guilt or, you know, it's
money's
evil.
Money's evil.
Yeah.
I actually, before I met Maria,
yeah,
because Maria's very money driven in a good way. Like, she's a salesman, so money, money, money.
Saleswoman.
Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Sales androgynous person.
Yes.
Anyway, before that, I had this idea that like money makes people evil and greedy, and because I have a fucking art degree. And people like wouldn't.
And you were a yoga teacher. And
spirituality. Like, there's money and spirituality have nothing to do with one another. And the more money people have, the sadder they are. Blah blah blah. So I had all these preconceived notions and stories about money. And I'm not exaggerating. This is super true.
Mary and I,
we didn't have like a fight, but we definitely have had heated debates where she had to bring me around to the fact that money has no inherent quality, and I was just making all that shit up because of. Basically my past. So talk about that.
Say more about that.
Such a fun topic. And so, yeah, that goes hand in hand with taking the behavior out of money. And so people do have that. That's a real fear because they've seen money mistreated.
Mm-hmm.
And what that looks like in a real situation is, you know, you may feel guilty about getting a $100,000 commission check or making a bunch of money because you don't want to make more than your parents because you'll feel guilty. When in the reality of the situation, when you know that you're up to some big shit and doing the right thing and creating value in the world,
mm-hmm.
thank God that you're the person that's making the money. Because you know what? There's almost 100% chance that the pass-through, meaning when money is used as a resource to empower the world in a different and more powerful way, that it's being used appropriately.
Mm.
You know, we live in, and y'all live in a beautiful area here in Houston and River Oaks, and there's, you know, all these fancy cars driving around, and there's generational money. And guess what? Some of these people come in and still meet with us because their kids have no idea what to do. We have a big problem that we're facing in America. Huge, huge problem. Can you guess what that is?
Trump.
Okay, we won't get into politics. However, there's a lot of baby boomers. That's fine, and
yeah.
That's welcome.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of baby boomers that are right now retiring that will retire and run out of money. And it's going to be left to their children to support them through the later part of their lives.
Mm.
And it's the truth because they haven't planned to undergo what's happening and that's going to happen in the markets, and they haven't planned for the taxes and economic pressures that's get put on their portfolio.
Yeah.
So I know that's a lot to think about and talk about, but yeah, when people think about money in that way, in a greedy way, typically when people go after money in a greedy way, typically it will leave them in a greedy way.
Mm.
So they won't hold on to it.
Yeah, I, like Junon said, I like money. I'm very money driven.
Me too.
And I've never experienced myself as thinking or wanting it for evil reasons or, you know, selfish reasons or whatever. It's always been, and I think we talked about this on episode 3, where I've never really had that or haven't experienced a lot of self-doubt or self-esteem issues. So the way I see the world is, yes, I should definitely be compensated for what I'm doing because I'm up to big things. I'm here to change the world and make this world better, right? I'm here to empower people. And for that reason, it's just this give and take relationship, right? Where I'm providing all of these services or doing all of these good things, and I should also be taken care of.
Mm.
So I've never had that negative connotation attached to money, despite the fact that I've seen it be mistreated in my family. I just didn't care. I always just said
you're
I was
from Ecuador, where the government shows you guys how to mistreat money
zero
left and right.
Yeah.
Oh, so does America, by the way.
Well, yeah. I mean, every country, really.
Most of our entire economy is riddled with debt, and debt is not necessarily a bad thing. Don't get me wrong. However, if there's not a place on a person's balance sheet for that debt to die, for it to go away and be handled in a methodical way, then it's not a good thing.
So America's going to collapse and we're all going to die.
No!
Just kidding.
All right, well, let's move to where do you want to go?
I don't know. Well, it's pretty luscious in Russia. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, my God.
Hey, it's a beautiful country. I'm not speaking of the politics at all.
Just like watching the World Cup and all of those like cities where they're hosting them and all the interviews.
St. Petersburg?
And, yeah.
Anyway.
Just, I wish we would have been there.
Well, to chime in, so you guys both have, I just heard, like never really had that big of a problem with money. And I just mentioned to you guys, like pre-marriage, like I was so anti-money.
Yeah.
And you were too?
No, what we haven't talked about yet is that like I was raised to believe that debt is a horrible thing and not to owe anybody any money.
Yeah, I mean, same, and that's because I saw my parents just like take out credit cards left and right, and then I'll be able to pay them back.
And that's the thing. I think that's where I was going, and I kind of didn't quite finish my thought because I got distracted. And I think a lot of those negative connotations come from your family, how you're raised.
Mm.
You know, your experience as a kid and how you see it, right?
Because
it shapes your, shapes the identity. Or the
like it either shapes it in a way where it's like, I'll never do that. Or it maybe shapes it in a way where it's like, I want to do what my parents tell me to do.
And you said something that was important there. You said it's a negative connotation. It's not really a negative thing. It's really a powerful way to teach your kids to kind of get into the successful state of being. However, with us being entrepreneurs sitting around this table, me having a financial practice and you guys up to some pretty big things, which you haven't probably disclosed to the world yet, by the way.
No, not yet. Stay tuned.
Really exciting things.
We're pre-famous right now.
Really excited for them, by the way.
Thank you.
Entrepreneurs have to take on risks, and sometimes the capital is not available to them. And so you have to trust in your own intuition and ability to be able to achieve those goals. And so understanding the realism of your money and also understanding your human life value and what you're capable of generating for yourself to step into that growth.
Mm-hmm.
That's the leap of faith where you believe in yourself and you're willing to take that risk to take it to the next level to then be a pass-through resource and create greater good in the world.
And this would not, like me even having entrepreneurial ideas, wouldn't have been possible had I not shifted my way of being about money.
Mm-hmm.
Because before I had shifted my way of being about money, like I had this sort of dreary outlook on life. Like, oh, I don't have a good degree. People aren't really buying my paintings. I'm just going to have to be a server. And then I lamented that the system of money was wrong and bad. You know what I mean? Like I was just like, well, I shouldn't have to play the game. Like the game is stupid. That was my whole thing. And let me just, I'm speaking to past me and anyone out there who might be listening who currently does not have a good relationship with money for the reason being money is evil and the way this country's run sucks and da-da-da, any of that iteration of those statements. I realized that I was playing, like for, to put it very baldly, I was just playing the victim or the martyr. I was like, Mom, I'm just a victim of the system. Like, I didn't say that out loud to myself, right? Because obviously, if I was aware of it, then boom, I would have been like, oh, well, it's kind of a silly way to be and change.
Stop it.
Yeah, so I wasn't aware that I was playing the martyr card pretty hard. And that there's a, I think it's from the Light Your Work. It might be Baptiste Yoga. I don't know. But the tool of... what is it? Change a complaint into a commitment.
Yeah, that's like,
because I was just complaining about the money system. And here's the thing. If I cannot change my complaint to a commitment, then stop complaining, Janon. Because like, if my complaint is the way money is run in the world sucks and isn't favorable to the little people, then if I'm going to keep complaining about it, then I better damn commit myself to changing the way the money is run. However, I'm not interested in becoming a financial superstar and paying off the
world
right
economist
or wrong people. Yeah, I'm not interested in being the global economist of the world. So guess what, Janon? Stop complaining and just fucking play the rules, like play with the rules of the game or play by the rules of the game, because there's nothing inherently wrong with doing that. Like, by complaining about it, I was just making my quality of life worse versus simply accept that some things are the way they are because I'm not dedicating my life to changing them. And then by playing by the rules of the game, like, I could win the game. If Absolutely. I don't even try to play the game, then of course I'm going to lose. I'm going to be a sore loser. Ugh. So.
Well, the key is, you're saying a key word that I'm hearing, and it's the game.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of your life, like, my belief is that you better be good with three people, right? Your priest, your doctor, and your financial advisor. Because if you're not in good graces with those people or whatever you believe in, like, your balance is going to be off.
Mm.
If your health is off, life ain't good.
Yeah.
If you're not good with whoever you believe in, whether it's God or not God, or just your belief system is off, you ain't going to be good.
Mm-mm.
If your money's not right, you ain't going to be good. You cannot borrow money for retirement. You can borrow money for a car, for a house, for a wedding ring. The most important thing that people misunderstand is once you hit retirement, that's it. There's no borrowing money.
Yeah.
Unless you find the fountain of youth.
Yeah.
Well, that's a whole nother conversation.
I have a question for you guys. This is an interesting one. So the way finances work nowadays, as we know it in America, we're pretty familiar with that. However, there's a few different cultures around the world that operate really, really differently than us.
Mm-hmm.
One example I can think of, and this is just through being a super yoga nerd and reading a bunch of books on the history of India and that kind of stuff, and even contemporary Indian practices. And so they have I always feel so dumb when I say this word. Is it caste or caste? It's caste, right?
Yes.
The caste system?
Yeah.
Why do they put the E at the end of the word then? Okay, whatever. So the caste system, and that there are certain roles in society that people play. And one of the roles that folks play is to, in certain religions, is to be a wandering beggar. To be a wandering beggar as you're that guy is a spiritual AF dude, according to, his followers, his believers, or his kin. What do you guys think of that? As far as finances go and money goes, what about choosing to live without money? Do you think that's just as empowered as choosing to live with money?
That's
Say
a good
more about
question.
That, right?
It's a good question, and I think it depends. I know you. I saw your face.
Because that dude might or might not be happy. I don't know.
Yeah. So I think that's one of the reasons that I stepped into this career so boldly, is that I did enter the yoga scene, and what I realized really quickly is some of my happiest clients had the least amount of money, and they were so happy just teaching yoga and earning $30,000 a year in a city, which is a challenging income in a city.
Yeah.
In country, it's that's okay. And so, and then I work with clients that make over $1 million a year, and they're completely unhappy. And so what I did as a sort of a case study was identify and get serious on people's goals. And what I realized is people that have goals are just lit up in whatever they do.
Mm.
So money doesn't really matter. However, currency follows value. And so the more value that you create in your world, whatever it is you do,
mm-hmm.
whether it's teach yoga, run a company, a law firm, etc., I believe that currency will follow that value.
That's awesome.
So what I'm hearing is essentially the value or the currency, money, is or follows, it's like a flow of energy, and it just goes towards value.
Wow, humans are crazy animals.
I believe
we're
so
just so
much.
Crazy. Because here's the thing about the spiritual dude, the aesthetic that doesn't want money. He's a beggar. The only way he survives is by people handing him food, basically. His value in his currency isn't just actual cash money. It's spirituality. It's minute by minute, through his eyes, experiences, I assume. I'm not him. So for him, he has a goal, a really high-minded goal of attaining samadhi or nirvana, whatever style, enlightenment, whatever language you want to call it in.
Yeah.
And so because he's got that super high goal and he's crazy dedicated to it, he can happily live his life without money. Though
Or without earning, working for money.
Though another guy, let's call him Donald Trump, he has a lot of money. And though, like, his goals are all over the place, and he doesn't even...
Allegedly.
Whatever. This is a made-up guy. It has nothing to do with anyone in this real world.
Okay.
I'm just saying he has a lot of money, and his goals are not aligned with what he really wants. So then he could be really, really unhappy, even though he has a lot of money. Is that what you're saying? Essentially?
Like, essentially, yeah.
Goals,
I mean,
equal...
when you have a vision, and you have goals, and you have something that you're going to... an intention to
mm-hmm.
create... like, everything will follow after that. And
mm-hmm.
so maybe that beggar, in the eyes of that beggar, it was, how many people can I get to give up something that they don't need?
Because
how good
does
it feel to cleanse something out of your life that you just don't need, that you can give
away?
You know, when you move and you get rid of stuff and you're like, that, like, shit, I hate moving. And then you move and you're like,
yeah.
you know what, but I got rid of a lot of stuff I just didn't need.
Yeah, it's like you were in a minimalist paradise when you get back to your new apartment.
Right, right.
That's awesome. What do I want to say about that? Because you just said something that made me really interesting. Oh, people's goals. So, like, it seems that you are, like, you assist people in setting goals, finding out what really drives them passionately, and you simply have a specialty in the money aspect of achieving those goals. Is that what I'm hearing? Because, like, as a yoga teacher, I'm all about that, too, with the goals in people. Like, when people come and get on their mat, I'm like, okay, here's your physical goal, here's your mental goal, here's a spiritual goal, here's why you want them, I assume, because you walked in here, and let's go for it. And you're, like, the same thing, except instead of a series of poses, you're giving them a series of money exercises.
Yeah, I mean, just, I can speak to you because I'm a yoga instructor, too, but, you know, so in the yoga room, it's like, I'm here to help you flow through whatever you're going to go through in this class. When you come into my financial practice, I'm going to help you grow through whatever you go through in your life.
Oh my God, you're a poet.
I love it.
Brett, and you're so dreamy.
It's just such a simple way to look at it, right? Like, here's my money. What's the best thing to do with it?
Yeah.
So on that subject, you guys are talking about, you know, yoga and all of the teachings and all of the light year leadership tools. And I know, Brett, like we said, you've done teacher training, you've been involved in Baptiste yoga, and you have done a lot of the light year leadership work. How has that impacted you, or how has that changed your view and your approach towards finances?
Like, not only other people's, but even your own finances.
Yeah, your own.
That's a really good question. So the Baptiste principles, which are the three source principles of Baptiste yoga, which is come from you already now.
Me?
Yeah.
Yay, yarn.
Be a yes and give up what you must. And so the tagline of my company is Rethink Wealth. And so the first objection that I get from most people is, no, I'm good, or I got an advisor, or I'm all set.
I advise myself.
Okay. And so, like, the question that I bring back to people, I said, if you really, that's amazing. I'm so glad you do. Do you trust your current financial advisor or the person that you trust with the money enough to get a second opinion? Because if I, for instance, had a heart problem, right, and I went to a doctor and they're like, you need surgery, right, you need surgery, would it behoove me to go see another specialist and get a second opinion on whether or not I should get surgery?
I would.
And this is kind of sensitive. My dad's dealing with this right now. I'm like, Dad, I think you should just go see another doctor. Like, this, it sounds like maybe through yoga you could even heal this valve and get it stronger and, like, build up that muscle again. You know, one person's opinion may not be just. And so even if the first doctor is right, it's always really nice to have a second set of eyes on a situation.
Mm.
And so just being a yes, that means, like, if you come in, if y'all would have came in and we would have sat down and looked at your situation and there's nothing I could do, which happens quite often, I said, this is what I would do. Maybe in a couple of years we can sit back down, get together and rediscuss your goals and where you're at. You know, life happens, things change, people die, you come into money, you go out of money, and you evolve. And so helping people through the evolution of how they come in and out of money and keeping the most that they can, not in a selfish way, keeping the most they can so they can create a resource for themselves to live the life that they want to. That's what's important to me.
Well, how about your own finances?
For my
own? Yeah, how does come from where you are already now, be a yes, and...
You are ready now.
Wait, what's the order of them again?
Yeah, it's come from you already now.
Uh-huh.
BS, and then just give up what you must.
Give up what you must.
So giving up what I must. So, like, I would love to own a house, and right now, all the fees and the taxes and the maintenance and things like that don't align with my life. And meaning I like to travel. I like a turnkey security system where I can leave the house and not feel like I'm afraid of a break-in.
Yeah.
My dog Roxy is happy and healthy in a community that's like simple to live in.
Yeah. So basically you allocate your money elsewhere and you give up the idea of living in a house because it's not as high on your priority list. Is that right?
Right.
Question. What do you think about sometimes emotionally spending money?
I think there's a euphoric sensation that happens with spending money, and I support it, which is also why I believe that you don't know when you need that euphoria, and so saving money allows you to not take on more debt, and it allows you to spend that money. Have you ever taken, let me ask you, have you ever taken a vacation that you fully saved for? Like, you were like, $5,000, we have all this money, and we're only going to spend $3,000, and if we spend $5,000, that's cool, but we got it.
That's a good
album,
I would say.
Yeah, and the 20 times we've traveled, we've done that once.
Right.
the other 19 times
we just... Wasn't it a cool experience? Because you just didn't have to worry.
Yeah.
You didn't have to like, I'm pulling out my credit card. Nope, it's like, it's paid for.
It was almost like every time we're just like, oh my God, it is like, wow,
we can have this.
Yeah, no splurge on this. Why not?
It's a cool... So then that's euphoria too. Knowing that you've accomplished something, which could be a simple savings goal.
Going to Cuba could be a financial euphoria paradise because, as an American, you cannot use credit or debit cards at all, not even for ATMs. So you must take the cash with you that you're going to use there because you cannot get any more. So I guess Cuba was another one we did that with because...
Because why not? Yeah.
Why not? Because if we didn't, we would be stranded there.
Yeah, if we would have
gone hungry.
Like, yeah.
Because we wouldn't have brought enough money. For example.
Right.
Like, we literally had cash in an envelope.
I met with you guys the day before that you left.
Oh, that's right.
I was super excited for you. And it's things like that that make me so passionate. I'm like, good, you guys were lit up about going on that trip, and I'm the same way. Like, I have to be contained sometimes. I have to contain myself from traveling sometimes because I just know the financial impact of the goals that I have. When you understand your goals and they're really crystal clear, I would love to have a family. I'd love to have a house. These sort of things are really important to me within the next 5 years. And so having the capital and money to be able to do those things, I have to get smart and strategic with what I'm earning.
Mm.
So you're talking a lot about goal setting and like a lot.
Like a lot.
Like very much a lot. And who was it? Someone that went on the Lion Leadership trip and did all the trainings. Maybe it was Caroline. But someone described it as like essentially training to become a professional goal setter. Is that how you would describe it, Light Year Leadership?
You know, when you're in the Light Year Leadership work, you know, so one of the beautiful things that my job afforded me to do, aka give me the flexibility and freedom to do, was to travel last year to Ethiopia and experience Light Year Leadership methodology being integrated into a socioeconomic society that is nothing like America.
I found that
so passionately amazing because I was like, wow, you know, doing Light Year Leadership in America is expensive. Like,
it
to
is.
Go through all the trainings, it takes a lot of time, and you're doing Zoom calls, and you're like, come on, like, Kaylee, you're my friend, give me a deal, you know, come on. And really, it's not about that. It's about your buy-in. It's about your buy-in, right? It's like, I'm gonna put money down to become a better person, not because this person really needs me to, but because I'm saying I'm in. I'm committed to doing this. Where then it allowed us, guess what? It allowed us to deliver this beautiful thing to people that didn't pay for it. Like, they didn't pay a dollar. However, they took such a big upgrade from the work that we did here in America. And
that's how Africa Yoga Project works, too.
The message just got clearly delivered. It's such a beautiful thing that it's almost undescribable, to be honest. And so, yeah.
You know, that reminds me. I recently talked to someone who said they won't go to a yoga class if it's over like $5 or $10 because like paying a more bigger like $15-$20 is just ridiculous, and yoga should be free. And it just goes back to what I was talking about with like being a quote unquote like, it sounds pretty harsh when I say it, and I mean it with all the love to anyone out there who's listening who is arguing with what I'm saying right now, basically. Like, it's a martyrdom thing.
Yeah.
I, as a yoga teacher, just FYI, yes, the drop-in rate to Big Power Yoga is $20. But do you guys know how much awesome work gets done by so many employees? We're, none of us are walking away like millionaires. Not even Nancy, the owner. I mean, I assume. I don't know for sure, and I highly doubt it.
Well,
you know?
even if she were, like, my experience of Nancy is that she takes, Nancy and Laura, they take all of this and they invest it back into the community.
Yeah, big time. So the fact that we're charging $20 for a drop-in isn't greed motivated. It's ridiculous. It's not. Economy motivated. It's motivated by making the place a better place.
By paying the heat and the humidity control and the towels.
And all the laundry.
And the human experience.
Yeah, and like training people to be good employees and good people out in the world. And I would say that, yeah, maybe there are some yoga studios out there that charge too much for their yoga and someone's profiting big time off of it. Maybe. Though, as a consumer, if I have a gut feeling about a place, I'm just not going to go. And it's not going to be because of the drop-in rate. It's going to be because I just don't have a good
Maybe
feeling about the people that run this place.
Yeah.
And it goes for any business, not just yoga. And, yeah, the fact that that argument, the whole fucking argument of yoga should be free or, like, leadership training should be free. Do you hear that fucking word, should? How entitled are people some days, you know? Or, I'm getting all grumbly about
the line
it.
Here.
Okay.
Okay. Take
again,
a deep
never
breath.
On anybody.
And I think that goes back to what I was saying about, you know, just the stories you attach to something that doesn't have any meaning.
Like, the story is attached to money. Like,
yes,
this class costs this much amount of money, so either pay it or don't go, but don't bitch about it. What good is that doing anybody? It's not going to make me, the person charging for it, go, oh, I'm sorry, it's free. Now that you've complained, like, I won't get paid at all. I don't know, man. People can get really weird about the whole money economy thing, and I think this is a really great conversation, and I sure hope that I haven't annoyed anyone so much with my irritation, first of all, and second of all, that our listeners got something out of this conversation, whether it was for themselves personally or to pass along to somebody else, in regards to viewing money as a neutral item that which a person can do whatever they want with it. Right?
Yeah. And I look at it literally as a resource.
Yeah.
It's a resource to live your life.
What? I want to ask Brett a silly question. What is the, we're just going to go on to a complete tangent here, just for the fun of it. What's the craziest thing you've ever done? Truth or dare? Truth, what's the craziest thing you've ever done?
Oh my God.
Dare do it.
I mean, let's see, the craziest thing that I have ever done.
I mean, honestly, going to Ethiopia and assisting the fucking government with their stuff versus light your leadership,
that's pretty crazy
in a
that's
good
cool.
way.
Oh, yeah. During a state of emergency, by the way.
What?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
We were on government lockdown, so we had to fly to the different cities and then take individualized Land Rovers to these
what?
Communities because the roads were blocked off. So we had to off-road for hours.
That's awesome. I mean,
yeah, that's pretty. I mean, that makes the experience.
The state of emergency probably not so awesome for the locals, though. The experience of that is, it is awesome. It is of awe and odd.
Yeah,
wow,
it was pretty powerful.
You guys want to know the craziest thing I've ever done?
Yeah.
Skydiving.
Yeah, honestly, it's between that and going to Nepal for the first time without barely having like traveled outside of the United States. and like trekking through the mountains and skydiving. Guys, if you haven't skydived.
Jumped off a plane.
If you haven't jumped out of a plane,
if you haven't jumped off, fly diving.
Off the little deck thing they have.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, if you haven't done it, I personally don't recommend it. Your face skin will flap all around, slap you. You won't be able to inhale because air is being shoved into your lungs. And the straps were way too tight and they hurt my crotch.
I disagree.
Maria really liked it, though, so.
I would 100% do it again. Have you ever done that?
Have you ever skydived? Yeah.
Dived.
I'm more of a scuba diver.
Oh.
That sounds fun. I want to do that.
So we went the same direction, but you're just way lower.
Yeah. I was like an astronaut.
But way lower.
Yeah. Weightless, you know? It's the closest thing to weightlessness. Cool. It's really cool.
I don't think I'm going to do scuba diving.
You'd be good at
Well, A, I have an ear thing, and B, I'm kind of scared of deep water.
It's really adorable.
The best scuba diving is usually between 15 and 30 feet.
Which is good for my ears.
It's not that terrible. After you get hit 33 feet, then things get weird.
Well, anyway.
Altitude.
Okay, Winnie's crazy thing you've done, you don't want to share, Maria.
I was trying to decide what...
Tell a story about how... This is bananas.
Yeah, that was pretty crazy. I didn't do it.
I know, okay.
Lived through it. I guess
this is the craziest thing that I guess has happened to us. Not necessarily just done.
I grew up in Ecuador, in Quito, in the 90s, when the Colombian cartels were at their full power. And if you've ever watched, like, Narcos or any of those shows like that, you kind of get the idea because some of that stuff was happening in Ecuador as well. I grew up all of a sudden, like out of nowhere, right? We would have so many Colombian refugees that just, you know, their kids went to my school. And it wasn't like a racist thing. It wasn't like, oh my God, we're not like pro-immigrants. It was almost a, you need to be careful because you don't know if they're associated with any of the...
cartels.
Yeah, with any of the cartels. Mm. So all of a sudden we had this taxi with three Colombian guys that would always stop in front of our house. And I don't know why they just started doing this. And after I think about two or three times that they did it, it's 3 a.m. one night. And I wake up to a ton of gunshots. And I mean, it sounds, it's loud, it's crazy, like I hear my mom is screaming.
Machine guns, right?
Yes, there were. No, AK-47s. It was loud. And it was multiple ones. And it kept going on for about an hour. You know, you hear just like glass shattered, like all of these things, right? And then there's people screaming and we're calling the police. And the police is just like, oh, yeah, no, sure, we'll be there. They never showed up. And
what were you guys doing?
We were home hiding, hoping that they wouldn't come in.
Hmm.
Because what else can you do, right? Oh, no, actually, that one time, I think my dad had a gun, and he only had two bullets left. So he was, like, you know, crawling on the floor and just, like, opens a window and just, like, shoots, hoping that he will hit something or someone. And I think he hit a piece of a metal or, like, the fence or something, and it just hit one of those little, or maybe the shell, hit one of the guys. And I heard him scream because he was screaming, like, oh, my God, he got me. And then they stopped and they left. Exactly 2 months later, more guys showed up at our house and did the same thing, except this time they actually tried to come in. And at that point, we had, like, bodyguards, and, like, there was this whole, like, shootout, and I don't know what happened. It was just...
Didn't your dog die?
Not then. That's a different story, but yeah.
Your dog got shot, right?
Yeah, my dog got shot.
Well, on that note, this has been a great...
America's not that bad.
Yeah.
That is a crazy, like, I can't top that. That is an insane life and spirit experience. Are you okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anna, my sister, couldn't sleep in her own bed. Like, she would get so scared until even after we moved. I don't know. I don't really think about it much.
Except when I ask.
Except when you ask.
Because it's just, as an American who had nothing like that, I lived the cushiest 90s lifestyle that there is, that seems just ridiculous to me, right?
Culture shock.
Right?
Yeah.
Anyway, I've been to Ecuador. It's beautiful and lovely, and we did not get shot at.
No, so it's safe now.
It's very safe now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd go there again.
Yeah.
Brett, is there any last things, knowledge bombs you want to drop before we wrap up this episode? Anything you want to say to our listeners? Go ahead. The floor is yours. And you can say no, and we just end the episode.
No, not really. I mean, we've really touched on pretty much what I do, how I do it, why I do it, and I'm just really grateful to not only have you as friends, but clients, and it's been a fun journey, and that's what it's all about, is the journey. It's not a simple decision, and it's about just capturing as much of your hard-earned money as you possibly can, and just doing the right thing together, you know?
Yeah.
Co-creating the strategy, not me just sitting here telling you what to do, so it's been fun, and I look forward to helping you pursue your really exciting endeavors.
Yes. We have some secret business plans.
Yeah, some ninja stuff coming out soon.
Yes, it's very cool and secret. I don't know why I'm talking like this.
You're whispering in with an accent. I don't know what's happening.
I'm tired.
So as the yogas and financial advisors say, namaste.
Oh, my God. It was really bad, Brett. It's but okay. So bad it was good.
It's a
good job.
I enjoyed it.
And we definitely hope that you listeners got good little nuggets out of this episode. Thanks so much to Brett. He's very knowledgeable on this topic. And, you know, like anytime, like not even as like we can just be out of the studio and I ask and Brett will have good answers for me. So I would say if you have any questions for him, just reach out and ask. He's not going to try to sell you anything. It's been a year now and we've had only great things to say about working with Brett and White Rhino. Just if you're going to get a financial advisor, you don't live around here and it's not Brett, just shop around for a little bit like I did.
Yeah, know that you don't have to stick with the same person. Like the first person you meet, you
get
can
a
shop
second,
around. Yeah,
get a second opinion. I just really like how Brett says opinion. You say opinion.
Must be a Midwestern thing. But
opinion.
I do have clients all across the country. So.
Oh, you do?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Well, you don't have to just be local.
We utilize GoToMeeting as a firm.
Cool.
Technology.
Yeah. Well,
So, yeah, and we'll let you guys, like, we'll keep the Blanket Ninjas updated. Like, if Brett starts to scam us, we'll tell everybody. Right away.
All about transparency.
Good.
Yeah. All right. This has been our episode. Remember, review us on iTunes.
Check us out on social media.
Yeah, all the social media stuff. We have, like, cool content. We're going to ask for your questions for the next episode, by the way. So look out for that. And patreon.com/BYOblanket. Go take a look.
Blanket Ninjas.
And be a Blanket Ninja.
Yes.